you take someone like me and you see what happens to people who do speak out, it becomes pretty serious pretty quickly. You know, we're talking problems with the law, problems with the police, threats.
For them to see you burning a flag with the rainbow symbol in must be very upsetting. Have you given thought to that?
No.
No?
Then I'll set fire to it.
You can't say that. I'm not, like, I wouldn't shag that.
I said, who would want to shag that?
That's
is,
even worse.
Is what I said. Is it worse?
Come on, yeah.
No, no,
okay. You should apologise. Do you feel happy, though? Are you happy? Did you expect, when you said you wouldn't shag Ava Santina, that it would cause the kerfuffle that it did?
I think it's hilarious. I still find it hilarious. Because...
Did you get thrown under the bus by Dan Wooden? You always would have spoken.
I would. You have to, because the thing is about life, I've worked out, is just get these bitches away. They're not even lesbos.
That's going in the trailer.
Knew it.
Hello, heretics. Today is someone who is nothing but a heretic. It's Lawrence Fox. What an intriguing person. Lawrence, it was so interesting to get up and close with. For those who don't know, Lawrence Fox is an actor, or basically a former actor now, who spoke out against some of the woke stuff that is going through the UK right now. And that was basically the end of his acting career, as of yet, anyway. His former spouse is a famous actress in herself. I don't know. Billy Piper. And he is from a sort of legacy acting community of, well, a family, I suppose. Lydia Fox, Jack Fox, Robin Fox, Thomas Fox, those are the siblings. There's an Emily Fox somewhere. There are parents that are Foxes, I believe. There's a James Fox. These are all the Foxes. And he's one of the most controversial figures in the UK. He's gone about doing things like burning the trans LGBTQIA plus flag, which I asked him about. Was that helpful? Was that a good thing to do? He was in trouble for calling Ava Santani a that. He said, I wouldn't shag that. And I asked him about that as well. So, you know, I wanted to give him quite a hard time. He actually reached out to me and he messaged saying, hey, you know, I know you're going to give me a hard time. At the same time, it wasn't always easy for me. Maybe that's sort of shown where I am now, to find things that were that bad. I mean, the thing is, it's one of those things where I think if you catch a glimpse of someone, you go, oh gosh, that guy's controversial and bad and stuff. And then you actually meet the person in the flesh. And I think there's something, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, I think there's something of a wounded person in Lawrence. He's obviously got his demons and things. And when you get up close to someone like that, you know, you sort of want to help and say, hey, what's going on? But look, we have a really interesting chat. I hope this is in some ways the most personal and personable that you might see Lawrence Fox, who is best known for his role as James Hathaway in the drama series Lewis. So do check that out. Follow Lawrence on Twitter. Go find him there. I'm just looking at his now. He says only a few days until Nazi month. I don't know which month that's about. Maybe that was from a while ago, that tweet. No, 2 days ago. What's that in reference to? Oh, it's the LGBT month, and he's fashioned the trans stuff into a swastika. I mean, this is the stuff where I think, you know, are you bringing people on side? You know, he's got a different way of going about it to me. But what a good laugh he was, and what an open person. So hope you enjoy this episode. As I say, go follow him on Twitter. Go check out his own show, which he runs on Twitter with Calvin Robinson, who is a priest, who's also... always been very friendly and lovely whenever I've met him. Good fellow as well. And not a good fellow as in the mafia. And I'll see you at the end. You know what I want to do? Okay, firstly, because Rogan does this and I'm going to be as successful as Rogan, I'm giving you a gift, which is this cigar. It's a Foundation Cigar American Line.
Oh, my Lord. Thank you
very much. Is that a posh thing?
Look at that. Well, look at the case as well.
Is that nice? I don't even know. I wouldn't know.
I'll tell you right now because I'll smoke it. Oh, can I?
You're welcome to smoke it, please do, because we're being cool on this show.
That's, well, look. Look at that beautiful case. Thank you. I need that as well, because you're often without one.
Oh, you're very welcome. I was with some high up people and who wanted you to have that.
Right. Well,
but
I bought this.
You can cut it, you can sword it.
I carry one with me wherever I go.
Oh, how wonderful.
No, yeah. No point in having a cigarette then.
I wish I had such a vice, but I don't.
Do you not have any vices?
Just murdering.
Murdering? Who do you murder?
That would be telling.
Oh, obviously can't tell you.
Can't tell you. I suppose podcasting and making people not like me and now not allowed to talk in places, something that we have in common, of course.
Yeah, cancellation. It's brilliant, isn't it?
It is brilliant. And I suppose that's a segue just for the very few watching who don't know of your sort of backstory. Obviously, you are... Apparently, I haven't actually watched your stuff because I don't watch much TV, but everyone I've spoken to says you're actually a phenomenal actor.
Oh, that's very nice then.
Yeah, you're actually apparently very good. So that's a good thing. Mm. And then can you take me back to, I suppose, Question Time sort of changed everything, didn't it? Tell me about Question Time. What happened?
Yeah, so I'd written I did music as well. I'm a phenomenal musician
I bet.
And I did music and I wrote a political song about what I was noticing on film sets mainly and the sort of suppression of free speech going on, which is bad in art because... you need to express yourself freely, otherwise it's shite, as we notice by almost every film that's made nowadays. And so I was invited to go on that charming man, Nihal Arthur-Nenneker or something.
Yes, his name. It's a radio presenter for those outside the UK. Mm. Quite woke, I'd say.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And possibly, you know, in my opinion, extremely racist human being.
Right.
And I was invited on his show and we got chatting about some of the woke stuff and it sort of just came out of me. And then I thought, oh no. And I'm going over to Question Time the next day. And I thought to myself, you know what? I've been planning for a couple of years to just say what I thought. And I knew it would have a bit of an effect on my career, but I thought I'm going to say it anyway. I'm sick to death of people, you know, Meghan, I want my privacy, Markle. You know, calling everyone racist just because we find her a bit of a ball ache.
Yeah.
So I said that and career suicide, you know, that was Equity, the Actors Union, charming bunch as well of communists, called for me to be denounced by fellow actors in full communist Marxist style. And I then sort of went, oh, wow, I knew there would be kickback, but I thought that some of the people in the profession would go who are conservatives, because there are quite a few, or libertarians. But no, they ran for the hills. And
And yet everyone I know, even fairly woke people who watched that went, oh, he does have a point about quite a few things. I mean, what were a couple of things you said on Question Time? Because that was massive.
Oh, Question Time, I said they wanted to talk about environmentalism. And my take on environmentalism was, don't ask actors, because we moan about business class seats and first class seats, and you know any actor who goes on about the environment, you know, it's like Taylor Swift going on about the environment. It's like, all right, just give up your private jet and more polar bears will live. So I wasn't good on the environment. I said that. I said Britain wasn't a systemically racist hellhole, although there was obviously, there are examples of direct racism everywhere, but it seems to be becoming a systemically racist hellhole, I've noticed.
Yeah, it will when it can.
Yeah.
When you're permitted to say racist things in a particular society, people will do it. And there's a certain kind of racism that's permitted right now and people will do that.
Yeah, exactly. And they love it. And then I also said that I criticized, I think I was sat next to Shami Chakrabarti, who was saying something about women being important.
Yeah.
And, you know, she said they were talking about who should be the next leader of the Labour Party. And I think I said Keir Starmer. And then she went, why not any of the women? And I went, all right, no, you're right. Any of the women. Put her in charge. So that didn't go down brilliantly either. So by the next morning, I was, I don't think I'd been called a racist by that point, but then people start going, yeah, we'll go for the ists and the phobes.
Interesting.
And then, you know, they just sort of gather up now. I've got all of them. Benjamin Butterworth called me a sexual assaulter yesterday.
But I saw that, and it feels like that can't be a real person with that name. Is that definitely a real person?
He's a real person.
Benjamin Butterworth.
Is he called Benjamin Butterworth, or is that the film?
That's what I mean. Don't know.
I think he's...
Does he know? We should ask. I don't know him.
I used to have him on my show on GB News.
Oh.
Along with Narinda.
Okay.
And they were perfectly nice, decent people. But I suppose GB News have got to have a bit of a woke element to them to satisfy the off-communists.
Aha. So, okay, like I say, it seemed like everyone agreed with you. I mean, Britain obviously by any metric is not systemically racist and certainly not racist compared to other countries. I've lived in about 5 different countries, all of which were significantly, obviously more racist or less aware of all the unconscious bias and those kinds of things in Britain, where they just say whatever they say. We have those problems with footballers who come from those kinds of countries, South America, for example, and say these kinds of things, and then they get in trouble because they can't believe that they can't say that. So here we really do police racism, and we really are quite good on it. It's quite extraordinary. So everyone seemed to agree with you. However, you were just banished. And I know we've got the whole bravado thing. We're blokes. You got the cigar, you know, but you've also been... Was it good?
It's a very rich cigar. It's very, very nice.
How fantastic. Indeed. Well, yeah. Anyone, it's like I say, foundation cigar.
I'll start
cigar.
Shaking in a minute because that's, I shake anyway nowadays, but I'll start shaking even more once the nicotine hit and I rock it through them as well.
Oh, great. I'll feel like I'm doing my job if you're shaking. That's what I want to see on the podcast. But okay, bravado aside, you've been tribally or evolutionarily speaking, kicked into the savannah on your own. So, you know, did it hurt? What did it feel like?
It's really hard. You know how you have bad experiences in life and you tend not to remember them?
Yeah.
And the human brain is sort of seems to me to be programmed to only remember nice things for some reason, probably so you don't top yourself, I imagine.
Yeah.
And so, I can remember it being agony, but now I just find it annoying. Because it's like very difficult to own a house. Car insurance costs 10 times what it used to cost.
Why?
Politically exposed person.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So does that mean, not even if you didn't have like what we'd say controversial, does any politically exposed person have to have that kind of insurance?
I don't think so. I think the politically exposed person only happens to someone who, you know, talks about the things that people talk about in pubs.
Wow.
And tries to represent the interests of, you know, because at the end of the day, I didn't want to get into politics. I wanted to say, this is a problem. It's messing with art is getting crap. Let's make better art.
Sure.
And also let's not lionize victimhood because I'm a father as well. And I've got 2 young boys and I don't sit there and go blame everyone else. That's not how I raise them. So I think society seemed to be a bit of a happier union when people didn't celebrate whining morons.
Mm. So do you not remember that time? Well, you don't remember that feeling?
I remember the feeling of just despair because I was going, I'm going to lose my acting career, which I loved. And as you know, you very kindly said, I rated myself as an actor. I thought, you know, I was not interested in being a megastar actor, but I was interested in doing good work. And I was literally just doing the best work that I'd got to do as a gay yoga teaching drug dealer from Manchester in my last job.
Was that your role?
In something called White Lines. But before that, I was just like working my way up the army promotion system and paying, you know, corporal, second lieutenant, dickhead, captain, wanker, major, arsehole. And then I'd probably be up to lieutenant colonel, you know, psycho at some point. But that's the sort of posh trajectory in showbiz.
Okay.
And I was getting character parts, which I enjoyed, but big, good character parts, which required acting.
Were you ever given working class roles?
I did. I've done. I did a couple. I did Mick Sharp in Ultimate Force.
I suppose it would be cultural appropriation now, but Hugh Grant did it recently, a couple of years ago, didn't he? In Gentleman.
He did it, and he did.
Yeah. Do you not think it was good?
No, I didn't. Hugh Grant very hit and miss for me. But interestingly, Hugh Grant also did it in Mickey Blue Eyes.
Oh yeah,
with my dad.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So he did it, but he sort of made a mockery of himself within it. He's an interesting character, Hugh Grant, actually. I don't know enough about him. I'd like to get to know him.
I wonder what he'd think. I feel like he might he can't be that interesting then, can he? Tommy Robinson said courage comes from fear on your show.
Very interesting comment that, wasn't it?
And you said courage comes from having nowhere else to go. Which I've found as well. We know that's true in cults. People don't leave because they just wake up one day. It's that they get treated so badly that they leave. Is there an alternate universe where you've just been given like Ocean's 27 with like Brad Pitt and George Clooney and you've decided I'm not actually going to speak about any of these?
No.
And no, you always would have spoken.
I would. You have to, because the thing is about life, I've worked out, is I've been really wealthy in my life, and I've been really miserable, and I've been poor and happy. So I'm not sure money really comes into it in the as much as everyone says it does. Obviously, if you can't afford to clothe and feed your children, then, you know, that's a major issue. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're sort of stuck in various parts of the middle class and you're competing for square footage on a house, you know, who's got the nicer house or whatever, I think money's sort of less important than being authentic. And, you know, all those old truisms, like you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
Are,
but it's not just money, is it? I guess those guys are competing. They're going in Ocean's 11 or whatever films they're doing. That's my most recent knowledge of any movies.
I love it.
Whenever that was.
What did you last watch? Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. I was about 7 and watched that, and it was rubbish. But they're in it because it's like, hey, we're the guys. It's the status. We're at the top of our career, that kind of thing. That's a nice feeling. And might lead, because I imagine there are a lot of actors who are not saying anything who completely agree with things that you and I might say.
Certainly, you can tell who they are because they never give interviews.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? Hollywood actors. The very few that do just don't care. The Denzel Washingtons of this world and Morgan Freeman, who was, you know, that brilliant exchange. Have you seen that one?
No.
When he goes, the guy says it's Black History Month. He goes, I hate Black History Month. Hmm. And he says, why? And he said, why should my history be relegated to a month? And you're Jewish. Do you want a Jewish History Month? And he said, he has that thing that a lot of people who come up to me who happen to have black skin come up to me in the street and they say, I'm really grateful for you talking out because you are one of the few people, white people, who talks about black people like they're equals. And you don't talk about us like there's something wrong with us and we're a bit thick and we can't operate a computer, like was recently said.
Yes.
By someone.
Yeah. Was it Biden?
It was either Biden or, no, I think it might have been Kamala.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Some of these people don't know how to use computers.
Yeah. We've got to teach the black people to use computers. Don't someone take that out of context. I'm not saying that the black people, that they said it. They were the ones who said the bloody thing. That's really frustrating because I feel like I want to push those people to speak out more. Because if we all spoke out at once and said, okay, this is a toxic ideology. It's not actually helping. Victimhood has led to every travesty that's ever happened on Earth. You know, can't you get some of your showbiz mates to sort of speak out?
Well, the problem is they you know, you take people like Tommy and you take someone like me and you see what happens to people who do speak out. It becomes pretty serious pretty quickly. You know, we're talking problems with the law, problems with the police, threats, death threats, all of that sort of stuff. It becomes quite serious. So I can understand why I've got loads of active friends who agree with me, but they just like, don't know why you bother, mate, you know. Yeah. Get paid, enjoy it, my life's bliss. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, my life is bliss in a slightly different way.
Do you feel happy though? Are you happy?
No, I don't believe in happiness. So it's not possible. I mean, you can feel happy, but it's not. I'm not one of those people that goes, I want to be happy. I want to be fulfilled and I like feeling content. But mainly it's, you know, life is quite a roller coaster, I find.
You don't want to be depressed though.
Yeah, I don't know what depression is. Is depression like not wanting to get out of bed?
It's such a hard thing to, like, no one really pins down what it is. Because like, I keep hearing people say, you heard for years and years it's a chemical imbalance. And now people are always saying, yeah, that's not. Yeah, people are saying it's not that. So now I'm going, I don't know. And I wonder if there's just a certain element of society who feel depression and that's just what they have. And if you haven't had it, I can't really imagine that. I just live and walk and move and things happen.
I can get very, very low. Especially when big shocks come, you know, when you think, God, that's not right. And then, you know, especially if someone targets you, I think the thing that upsets me the most is a mischaracterization of me. But that's not about depression. That's more about going, you're willfully mischaracterizing me. And that is, I wouldn't do that to you. But actually, the longer you go on with it, the harder you get about it. And you just, you know, it's very clever, this whole movement, because they're trying to goad us into becoming like them.
Okay, yeah.
I see Away luggage a lot when I travel. As much as I love its looks, I prefer soft side suitcases and always wished Away made one. Well, guess what? Now they do. This suitcase seriously looks better than any old school soft side suitcases I've seen, and is designed to be lighter than others on the market. Soft side comes in 4 of their best-selling sizes and tried and true colours. There is something for everyone in the lineup: 2 carry-on sizes, 2 checked sizes, 4 colours, black, blue, pink, grey. Made from a high-strength nylon, the bag is tear-resistant as well as weather-resistant. I spilled a little bit of coffee on the grey one this morning and can confirm the claim holds up. The bag is soft but not sensitive, super durable, flexible and expandable. Bonus points for the compression pad system that helps you pack it in and the anti-tipping stabilizer that holds the bag steady while expanded. Both of which are proprietary to Away. And that's actually my favourite bit. It doesn't sort of wobble this way and that. I absolutely pack mine full, take it everywhere I go. Well, when I'm going on holiday, that is. And no matter what's packed inside, it doesn't seem to tip. You've got to check out the new soft side luggage from Away. Head on over to awaytravel.com/heretics. That's awaytravel.com/heretics to see the new soft side luggage from Away. awaytravel.com/heretics.
Well, so why that's a good segue into, you've had to deal with this thing recently. We can't use the P word. I call them PDF files on this show.
PDF files.
Yeah, the PDF files. You called a couple of people PDF files. They sued you. They won.
I called three people. Well, let's get the order right.
Yeah.
So what happened was, Sainsbury's put out a tweet after St. George of the Floyd died of whatever George of Floyd died of.
Yeah.
And they said, in support of our black colleagues this Black History Month, we're going to provide them with safe spaces. And I responded with, why are they in danger in Sainsbury's? That's protest segregationism.
I remember seeing that tweet, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I got called a racist by 3 people.
Oh, so they started?
They started. They called me a racist. And then I noticed, it was back in the days, do you remember the good old days of Twitter where someone who had a blue tick actually had a following? Mm-hmm. And I started noticing that the first 3 who popped up with a big following, I returned the compliment. So one said, anyone who hires Lawrence Fox, an ex-actress and now fired talk TV host called Nicola Thorpe, talentless wench. And she...
Don't say wench. Oh. Lawrence. Yeah, go on.
She's a vile
human. I know. I don't want to get in trouble with like the Dan Wooden thing because of you.
Oh, what? Yeah. That was stupid.
So I'm going to on camera say, don't say wench, and then later laugh with you about it.
Okay,
go on.
All right. She went, anyone who hires Lawrence Fox does so in the knowledge that he's unequivocally, unashamedly, and unapologetically a racist.
Right. The one of the most defamatory statements that anyone could ever make.
So I then responded with, anyone who hires Nicola Thorpe does so in the knowledge that she's unequivocally, unashamedly, and unapologetically a PDF file. And that one got thrown out, because it was obviously a rhetorical device. And then the other two, I was like, whatever, PDF file.
Okay.
We're going to try and appeal this judgment. But the minute you thought, I thought you're going to test it, see how corrupt the institutions are, and go to the judiciary.
That's incredible. I would just say, I thought that's what had happened, but it's so hard I was looking up in the news and all you see is the court case and you don't, I thought it must've been that they said racist first to you.
They did.
And I used to do the same thing as you, because I think we were all doing it. It was like, okay, it is something that's maybe hard to understand if you're not in the position where you've got a following and that kind of thing. You do just get these people, as you say, who come out and say things about you that are just obviously defamatory, obviously not true. And often I would get, people would send messages to people I was having on as a guest saying, oh, you're going on his, are you? Well, you know, he's a transphobe and he hates this and he hates that. So I did the same thing. And I remember one person in particular, he was a fellow YouTuber, and I don't know if I've still got those tweets up, but I really went for it because I said, like, that's interesting given what I've heard about what you've done to all those children or something like that. And he replied like, what about, like, over the top? That's not true. How dare you say that? And I was going, mate, I've got the messages. I've got the receipts, but obviously I did. Yeah. And then I got too deep into this because I had dozens of people messaging going, have you actually got? And I was like, yeah, unfortunately, it's really sad what that guy's up to. I went so far with it.
Wow.
It was like, I was like the weirdest. A friend of mine was saying, like, she remembers being a kid and she sort of got upset with people and she hacked into their Sims accounts, the Sims game, and would like take their money out of it and stuff like that. And I felt like I was doing this really childish revenge, but you do, like, that's where they put you, isn't it? What else can I say? No, that's not true. I'm not a racist.
Yeah.
You've got to give them their own medicine. And then you got sued for it.
I got sued for it, countersued in response. Her one got thrown out. Don't know why the other two didn't get thrown out. had a very, I mean, the court, I've got the transcript. I read the transcript of the whole 8 days twice because we left and my entire legal team were all patting each other on the back going, you know, top team, the guy who did the post office scandal, their QC at the time, KC now, Patrick Green, everyone's just going, brilliant, mate, you've nailed it in the box. Everything was great. There's no way these people can think you're a racist. So what happened was the judge decided not to define the meaning of the word racist. Really, really helpful. But she went on about how these people who have all been promoted have suffered grave and terrible harm to their reputations from my rhetorical device, which is blatantly a rhetorical device because I said it immediately after saying it. So we'll appeal it and we'll see whether there's some sanity in the court system. And I'm told by my legal team that I'm allowed to respectfully disagree.
Okay.
With Lady Justice Collins Rice.
Get another judge.
Well, they stick it up in front of the Court of Appeal, I think it's three. And the problem is, what they've left it as is, I am now a second-class citizen. I cannot not be, you can libel me, and I have no recourse back.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
because you've been in trouble for defamation?
No, because, you know, these guys have said, you're a racist. She won't define what a racist is, so anyone can call me a racist, and it's fine to get away with it. But, you know, on a purely sort of societal level, we're getting rid of the meaning of a very important word there.
I also think the free speech ramifications of you using clearly a rhetorical device to defend yourself. I'm concerned that people will think watching this, like, because you're my guest, I'm sucking up to you. I'm just, you know, but this is something that worries me a lot myself. I mean, we can just get attacked and attacked. Anything you say back, you're the one in trouble. And let's be honest here. This person, I mean, one of them was a drag artist.
Yeah, Crystal. And at one point during the trial, which was quite funny, there was a video of him with an angle grinder on a metal cod piece in front of children, which I've always objected to. But in the judgment, she says, where he applied an angle grinder to a part of his costume. And I was like, he's wanking in front of children. The judgment is, the judgment in itself is just utterly profoundly flawed.
But the idea that this person who's the people that are employing drag acts would be concerned that Lawrence Fox, even if it wasn't a rhetorical, you know, had said something, you're the enemy to these people. There's no way they would lose work in their communities because of something you've said.
They've all got promoted anyway. I mean, the Simon Blake guy, he's like in charge of some massive thing. And all the evidence was no one ever mentioned the paedophile thing.
We'll blanket.
All the evidence didn't mention the PDF file thing. All the evidence was, you know, Simon, you shouldn't have called him a twat. So everyone knew it was a rhetorical device, but they, for some reason, at the end of the day, you then got to go down the rabbit hole of why you don't get judges in defamation, why you don't get juries in defamation trials. I would have thought even in London, there would be, people would know, you know, but the problem is the media will just write it. And I'm Satan with two horns.
Speaking of Satan with two horns, then are there certain things you've done where you've looked back and gone, oh, perhaps that was, I shouldn't have done that. Maybe it wasn't right to burn the rainbow flag.
No, I love burning the rainbow
flag. Stand by that?
I'm going to burn it next Saturday. Can't wait.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's the reason for that? What's your excuse, mate?
It's the flag of the revolutionaries. I have a sort of fundamental objection to that. It's nuanced, like everything that is hard to talk about. But initially, there was a period in the UK where homophobia was, you know, more rife more commonplace, you know, and gay people felt threatened and they like to keep their relationships secret. So I can see why there would be need or you know, utility, as Jordan Peterson would say, for a symbol to say, this is a place you're safe here if you are a gay or a lesbian person. Or a bisexual person. So the rainbow flag. I take minor objection to the fact that they co-opted the Christian symbol of life and hope from Noah's Ark and this sort of stuff. But that's minor. Where I get upset is once you've got a sexual equality flag and then you start putting chevrons in it. Mm. And each chevron means something different. So you've got the brown chevron, and that just means for any brown people. Doesn't matter where you're from.
Is that what that's for?
Yeah, it's just for brown people. So you could be from Sri Lanka or Manitoba.
Just tanned.
Yeah, just down, just brown. Like my missus. Okay. It represents my missus.
Okay.
So she's brown? She's brown. She's represented on it.
That's great, because you now, that's the race car. I've got my wife who's his wife, girlfriend, partner.
She's currently girlfriend. She plays her cards, right?
Yeah. That's great, though. Well, you know.
So, I've covered that one off, shielded. Yeah. Exactly. I was just flicking through the book, and I was just like, oh, that's brilliant. I've got not Heidi. No more Heidi.
If I only had a trans minority person, little person, wife, husband, them, they,
you'd be fine.
I could say anything.
Well, you couldn't really, because they'd still say that you were a faker.
They'd say that mine is my missus then was
she's
was
your cover.
Well, Uncle Tom, sort of.
Yeah, which is what my missus gets quite a lot of.
Oh, for God's sake.
A lot of my mixed race friends get more racial abuse than anyone I've seen. Anyway, so you got brown, then you got black for black people.
Okay.
And George Floyd's. And stuff like that. And then you got the little transy one, the child mutilation cult.
You thought they were all bits of trans.
No, you've got Black Lives Matter, brown people, and then they're adding to it all the time, to the migraine flag. But ultimately, it's a revolutionary flag, isn't it? It's got nothing to do with them. It's got nothing to do with sexual rights or trans rights. Trans is just a tiny little, a very minority group of very disturbed and sad people who've got something going really badly wrong in their head, and that's a tragedy and needs to be treated, and not chop people's dicks off when they're upset about their body. So I objected to that. I object to the way it's taught in schools. It's a revolutionary flag, and I'll burn it every single day of Pride Month if necessary, because I went to Pride Month because I like to walk around and go to these things.
Yeah, you must be popular.
And I was popular with the gays.
Yeah.
So there was a woman there with hairy armpits who didn't seem to be a lesbian at all. She just seemed to be woke, and she started screaming in my face. And then a policeman tried to move me along and said, you got to move because you're upsetting her. And I went, she's screaming in my face. I'm not. I'm just standing here. Mm. And he went, well, you need to move because your presence is upsetting her. I said, you've got your job the wrong way around. You see, she's the one you need to move along.
What does that feel like to you?
Pathetic.
But aren't you, if I'm getting screamed at by a woman on the street, I'm mortified. And then I'm feeling the police are going for the wrong person. I would have that sense of injustice. I would feel gutted.
Yeah, some of the ways that I speak to the police, nowadays is, I'll weigh up a policeman or woman before I work out how I'm going to speak to them. But if they speak to me in a way which is, like that policewoman did, she'd get pretty short shrift from me.
Okay.
And then two lovely gay guys came in and they went, oh, get off him. They're ruining Pride, all these woke bitches. Yeah. They're vile. This used to be fun. This used to be a celebration of sex and being gay and lovely. And this is just, get these bitches away. They're not even lesbos.
That's going in the trailer.
So, God. Knew it. Knew I should have gone to bed earlier.
No, it was good though. Good accent.
Yeah. So they saved me. They saved me from the copper.
Interesting.
And they said to the policewoman, he's not done anything wrong. We've been watching this whole time. He's just walking around. And I like to interview people, and they say, look, I hate you. And sometimes by the end, they go, oh, I understand your position. Once the media are work the social media and the media itself work their view of you out, then people tend to absorb that view rather than the one that, just from meeting someone.
I went to Gay Pride in Berlin, and I looked down to the side, and there was a guy giving another guy a blowjob. Like, his willy was out, and it's a weird thing, because I've accidentally, of course, purviewed this on internet thing. Like, not that exact scenario, but those kinds of appendages have been accidentally thrust into my vision. However, in real life, they hadn't yet encountered that. And it was very different and very weird and strange. And I think it's really sad that what was a really important struggle for civil rights, I think, as you're alluding to, has now turned into a show that upsets those very people who did struggle for civil rights. And it's just, how disgusting, really, to throw that in their faces and say, this is all about sex and all that, when it was really about being able to marry another man and have those same rights that other humans have, not to have extra rights and be able to have sex in the street. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I mean, that I stayed for an extra half an hour watching them was neither here nor there.
The fact that I was just curious and asked if he needed any help.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with it.
When I say it was someone, my friend, I meant my boyfriend. No. So But what I want to say is that those civil rights people, okay, well, some of them might not be all fully familiar with how this has changed and the turn it's taken. And for them to see you burning a flag with the rainbow symbol in must be very upsetting. Have you given thought to that?
No.
No?
No. Because I know why I'm doing it and I explain why I'm doing it. So if someone chooses to deliberately misrepresent what you're saying, then it's pretty fine for them to do it. So I'll do it as a little shtick. I'll explain what they do, and then I'll set fire to it. I don't want, this is the only country in the world. I just got back from Alabama. And I mean, it's overkill, not overkill. I loved it. There's an American flag everywhere.
Yeah.
If you put a Union Jack up in England, immediately you're a vile, horrible racist.
Yeah.
That's it. But interestingly, where I used to live, a lot of Polish people live there, yeah, and they used to put Union Jacks up a lot. They were proud to be
pride of sort of a new immigrant. Yeah. That's the kind of immigration you want as well. People who really enjoy the culture.
Why don't we allow some, you know, oppressed Christians, grant them asylum from being killed by Boko Haram, you know, in northern Nigeria? Why don't we let some Christians in for once? I mean, give it a go. Might just work.
People who might embrace the values of the country.
People who don't believe in Sharia law. Yeah.
We can get on to that in a bit. But I think, okay, so with the LGBT flag, let's say someone had a problem with some of the things that America has done, right? And I'm sure they've done a whole bunch of pretty horrible things. And they went, okay, I'm going to start burning the American flag. It would upset a lot of Americans, wouldn't it? You wouldn't do that. Yeah. Or would you? Maybe you would.
I wouldn't burn the American flag. I love the American flag, even though I really don't like the current American administration. And, you know, if someone wanted to burn the Union Jack, I'd be upset. But the problem is, those are national flags. This LGBTQ+ IA,
what does the IA stand for?
Well, I think intersex and then asex, but it's the ++, which is the worrying part of it.
Imagine being asexual and feeling you need a resistance.
I need to be represented.
I
don't want to breed. I don't fancy anyone. Yeah. As I said, it's got nothing to do with sex. It's a flag of revolution. It's a flag to say we hate nations, we hate borders, we hate traditions, we hate institutions, we hate anything about the country that we live in, and we like face masks and violence.
See, I hate face masks. I hated face masks. I'm not going to say about vax, because it's just going to, there's no point. But don't you feel that if we want to change this, we need to convince the moderates who, when they see these kinds of things, the flags and the burning and all of that, they're not going to come round?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big argument for whether to do it in a much more kind of statesmanlike way. But they don't, you know, my view and my experience has been these people, given half the chance, would kill me. You know, the more extreme versions of them. So the best thing you do with a bully is you stand up to them, and you get, and also the thing that wokery is really struggles with is mockery.
So they've got no sense of humor.
If you rip the piss out of them, they just cannot cope because they take it so seriously. And it's like, I like to call them, you know, fancy dress revolutionaries, these little face mask wearing wannabe Antifa, new civil rights movement for the genocide of Israel and Gaza. You know, it's just like, oh, yawn off. Go back to LSE or wherever it is, or what's the other one? SOAS. And,
right. You
know, and yeah, do a lecture on Puerto Rican hat making.
Take me through. Did you expect, when you said you wouldn't shag Ava Santana, that it would cause the kerfuffle that it did?
I think it's hilarious. I still find it hilarious. Because if a woman said that, it'd be fine.
She had said things like that.
She said lots of things like that. And so, A, that just made me laugh. The sort of purging apology tour from the head of GB News, the home of free speech, to walk around going, well, we utterly condemn what Lawrence said.
Is he Australian?
Yeah. He's called Angelos Frangopoulos. And he utterly condemned. And I was just like, I was laughing because I woke up in the morning and my phone, you know, when your phone gives you notifications for news, it's always a worry when those notifications are just you.
Oh, man. So you didn't know till like the next day it was going to cause a kerfuffle.
I'd gone to bed thinking, yeah, good. And also it's like 9:45 at night or something. And I think it's perfectly acceptable. The only part of that I regret was that I should have said before I said I would definitely wouldn't want to shag that, which I maintain to this day. And I would encourage any man who wants to live in any semblance of happiness to never go near women like Ava Santina. I should have said this woman belittled male suicide.
That would have been better.
What I should have done. My brain is quite emotional. I'm an emotional person because you're taught to be emotional as an actor. You're always taught to respond emotionally and instinctively. What I should have done was sort of composed a sort of visceral takedown of her position. But what I like doing instead is getting to the nub of the point, which is like, don't breed with a woman like that. She will make your life misery.
She called me stupid on a panel with Piers Morgan.
Did she?
Yeah, she's not even that. You know what? In a sense, looking back, she did. I mean, what you did, you dehumanized her, you said, with that. It wasn't even the shag, it was with that. And she said, when I made a point, she's like, I won't argue with stupid.
And so she just said, oh, hang on a minute. Are you trying to tell me they're the exact thing that they accuse you of?
I know, but you know what? I had said to her before, look, say what you want to me. I don't care. And then I forgot. And then afterwards I said, you called me stupid. And she said, you said I could say what I want. I thought, yeah, that's true. So fair enough. But I appreciated when you messaged about coming on, you said you're gonna give me a hard time.
I'm happy for you to agree. I like being given a hard time.
That's what's missing in the world though?
Yeah.
Like, and I love it as well. Like, come on, let's go in, let's have a chat. Even with Eni Aluko, that went viral, that video on Twitter and all of that. You know, I walked her to the station after, we've been messaging since, totally disagree about everything. And it was just nice that we're able to do that.
She didn't feel embarrassed that she got owned.
She didn't know it had happened.
She still thinks it's true.
I think she's still, and I want to be nice because I do like her. And I've said to her, you know, come hang out sometime or whatever, and we'll play football. I'll let her score a couple.
We'll play football. I'll tie my shoelaces together, and I'll still be better than you. Stop it, Lawrence.
Yeah, I know. She would presumably be significantly better than me at football. But I'd beat her for
Joey. Joey Barton is very. I mean, Joey's videos he shares. I can't. I love the women in sport is amazing. It's just, again, it's nuanced. It's which sport? It's like women's tennis, I can watch all day.
It's pretty good.
I'll watch it all day. But women's football, I know, and the fact that it's pumped at us relentlessly. Yeah. I was driving past Lords yesterday, and women's cricket actually is sort of coming along. But it's just women everywhere. And it's like, okay.
We don't like the idea of someone from above deciding what we should be interested in watching and doing. It is absurd.
Yeah.
And you're right, the women's tennis, and it's so different because just as many women, I presume, play tennis as do men. Whereas football, in this country, I know Americans might feel differently about it. In this country, there's about 500 women who are really serious about football, whereas there are probably about 20 million men.
Yeah.
So to be the top of the top of the men, you've got to be extraordinary. Mm. To be the top of the top of the women, you've got to be like the best in your year at school or something. Like that, you're professional.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, we're one short for the Arsenal ladies first team. I've got to stop being this.
No, but it's true. But the issue here isn't us saying, first, obviously there's a physical difference making women. It's going to be a slower game. It's not going to be quite as good in certain ways because of the physicality of it. But as you've seen in tennis, it can still be really enjoyable because as long as you've got two really good players going at each other, it's fine. But the football, like I say, the problem is the lack of, there's no competition.
Yeah.
They're not playing it. Like, they don't play. And they're going, why not? That's a problem. We need to make women interested in doing a sport they're not interested in doing.
Stop politicizing sport. I don't want politics in sport, and I don't want sexual politics in sport.
No, but, I go to Spurs. It's huge. That
you've
flag
got you your burn. Equality. You've got your equality, girls. Yeah. So now enjoy it.
Yeah.
Instead of complaining about it again. You know, we've gone beyond equality. Now it's like, it's domination.
But you can't be called it. You can't say that. I'm not, like, I wouldn't shag that. Come on.
No, it was probably, I'd said, who would want to shag that?
That's even worse.
Is what I said. Is it worse?
Come on, yeah.
No,
you should apologize. I'll write it on this show.
I did apologize. I apologize for the use of language. I think I can see exactly why it would be taken in that way. Because I can see it might be taken that way, but what I was saying, who want to shag that sort of ideology?
I see.
That's what I was saying, but I can see how it comes out like that object.
Yeah. Also, I guess it makes it seem as though it's more important that a woman is shaggable than, you know, that might not be of interest to her.
Well, if a woman isn't shaggable, we're not going to breed, are we? So, you know.
I don't important. Know if she was intending to with you.
No, I'm not. I think I'm fairly confident that she had absolutely no desire whatsoever to ever shag me, and the feeling is entirely reciprocated.
Did you get thrown under the bus by Dan Wotton?
Yeah, but I don't mind. I like Dan. He's all right.
Okay. Because that was weird. You were both like on there, like, here's the tweet, here's what he texted me, this is what he texted
me. It's only because he phoned me the next day and he went, you know, Dan's a panicker and I'm not a panicker. I've learned from the 300 cancellations I've had already that the one thing you don't do is panic. So Dan was like, mate, they're going to, they want me to apologize and I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And I'm like, it's not going to make any difference if they've decided. And he's like, they want me to put this in about you. And I said, throw me under the bus, Dan. And I will tell you, I will share your tweet DM with me. If you do it, all you got to do is take that bit out because you don't need to say you were obviously giggling. It's obvious.
Yeah.
So say sorry for the giggling and make up many, many excuses. But don't say, A, you didn't know what I was going to say because I run it by all the producers. They all knew I was going to say it. So maybe it was a GB News setup to finally get rid of Lawrence Fox, who was irritating them hugely anyway, as I kept reminding them that as the home of free speech, it felt a little bit like a sort of Gestapo garden party.
I think it might not have been just get rid of Lawrence Fox. There was another man involved in that wanted ridding of...
What, Calvin?
Dan.
Yeah, they wanted to get rid of Dan and also Calvin. But the what I find... Look, sack me, fine, I don't care. But I found their cowardice about sacking Calvin to be one of the most pathetic pieces of corporate... weakness.
This is Calvin Robinson.
Yeah, it's what I call the woke right.
Yes,
that's what the GB News are. It's like, you know, we'll give up all of the principles of the Western civilization and, you know, free speech. What he should have done, the guy who runs the show, is he should have walked out and gone, whilst we completely condemn what Lawrence said, we are the home of free speech. So we have to support him. And if Ofcom find against us, he can pay the fine or we'll sack him then. But the apology tour, the sort of groveling apology tour was, it's just pathetic. And I meet a lot of people who, you know, because people love to characterize themselves as freedom fighters, you know, they love it, but they're not cosplay freedom fighters. They're freedom fighters in fancy dress.
Or when it suits them, I suppose.
Yeah. And GB News is full of them. And,
why did they get rid of Calvin then? Because he stuck up for you.
Calvin stuck up for Dan. Right. Calvin was on the phone to me, giving me a hard time because I have a good relationship with Calvin. He tells me the truth, and that's a good relationship. We have a proper relationship where he tells me when I'm a douchebag and I say sorry, I won't do it again, and then I do it again.
Mm. You know,
it's like a sort of marriage.
Yeah, I have a sort of relationship like with Tessa Dunlop like that, and she'll call, did I say the wrong thing? And I go, yes, you can't. Well, I don't want to remind people of some, you know, things she's done. We share an age and, you know. But so just to clarify, no, you don't feel sorry for saying that?
Well, you know, to a degree.
There you go.
I mean, worse things... I mean, fine, sorry.
I know what people can say bad stuff just and say sorry and then you move on.
I suppose if you live in my world and you read what people say they want to do to my children or my ex-wife or anything like that, I'm like, any man would say that down a pub. And most of the people I spend time with are in pubs, you know, are that sort of people.
Yeah,
sort
of. I suppose we want a different world for sort of what you would say with your friends and what you would say on air. And publicise. I've thought about that a lot. I mean, there've been a few sort of footballers, Dele Alli, for example. He'd been sharing a message. He said something fairly racist or with friends and messages, and one of them obviously leaked it to the press, which is just a contemptible thing to do. And I remember thinking he had to apologise and all this stuff. And I just thought, I feel like maybe you're allowed to be racist on your own with your friends. I think it was Louis C.K. said something like, when you find love, when you've got someone you can be racist with. You know, I don't, you know, or and I'm not just saying, you know, anti-Semitic. I'm Jewish. I don't mind. A friend makes a joke to me. Like, I'm, you know, that's different to them going on air and saying a whole thing with people they don't know. So I guess that's the public.
Yeah. It also, everything is about tone and intention, isn't it? It's not about necessarily what you say, because someone can say in a really... You know, if you can talk about white privilege, which is a stupid idea, and they can do it in a really serious tone, and I find that intimidating. Whereas if someone calls me cracker, I'm all right with it.
There was that Scottish minister, you know that speech where he went, like, the head of police, white.
White. Hamza white. Yusuf.
White.
It's like, yeah, okay, we get it, Hamza. You're a massive racist, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, if he was born in a different place and time and he was white, he'd be the one leading the Nazis.
Yeah, he'd be going, the prime minister, brown. You know, it's like, it's just shut up about it. It's Morgan Freeman's point. It's like, stop obsessing with race.
Yeah.
I'm bored of it. I was bored of it before. I'm bored of it now. All of my family are married to people who are not white skinned. My girlfriend.
That sounds
is,
over the top. All of I know, them. That's your eye.
Sorry, actually, that, no. One of them isn't. That, sorry. Yeah,
it sounds like you've got something to hide. The foxes are everyone we've got, you know.
So, oh, bloody hell, it's a bit much. It's have like you going, put your makeup on this morning, Helga?
Fucking hell.
And,
it's like it's that film, Get Out. Do you ever see that? That's what I'm imagining the Fox family.
Yeah, come up the ranch. Fox family, you know, we were just not raised with that stuff because we were raised as Christians, you see. And Christian, the whole thing is, you know, you're made in the image of God. So it doesn't really matter whether you're brown, black, yellow, or red.
Are you Christian now? Are you a believer?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Believe in God?
I do.
Do you think he's about?
I do. He's certainly about.
Yeah. I'm an atheist. I'd love to have, and there's no way of saying it not sounding patronizing, but I actually don't mean it patronizingly. I would love to have that faith. Mm. I had a discussion with David Baddiel about this. We both desperately wanted to have that because it's very sad and lonely.
Not without it.
Yeah, bloody hell.
Well, you may find it. You never know.
Sleepless nights.
No.
3 a.m.
Really?
Thinking about the abyss.
Have you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Genuinely?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't go back to sleep. Panic.
Thinking about the fact that you don't believe in that there's anything, you're just sort of here by accident.
Yeah.
Sort of, and that's it.
Imagining myself in a coffin.
Well, you can't imagine yourself in a coffin. You're dead.
No, not while I'm in the coffin imagining. I'm imagining myself later when I am dead. I mean, as an alive person, I'm imagining myself dead in a coffin.
Right. It sounds to me like you're already on the way.
I wish. I don't know if I should say, but there's a famous atheist called Alex O'Connor. Do you know he was vegan as well. He's not vegan anymore. And I'm convinced, I've wind him up about this, that in 10 years, he is going to be, you know, he'll be wearing the whole collar and everything.
I think you're finding a lot more people, even Dawkins realizes that whether you're believing God or not is a separate, personal and private issue, but you should probably proclaim it if you do, because that helps other people. But I think even Dawkins is saying, you know, having written The God Delusion, he's now saying, I really think we need Christians in this world, because he values the contribution that the faith and the ethical, even ethical Christians, you know, people who follow the Christian ethical model, are helping society.
I think Dawkins didn't quite, just in my opinion, I didn't quite mean that. He said he was a cultural Christian, which he's always said he was, but it wasn't a big deal to say that 30 years ago, and now it is.
Right.
And that he would choose Christianity a million times over Islam, because he believes Islam is 700 years in the past, but that he has no inclination towards any sort of belief in God or anything. And he thinks that, because I watched him have this debate with Ayaan Hirsi Ali in New York recently at an event, and it was a fantastic debate with a really open-minded crowd, where everyone was like applauding everything Ayaan said, because she's become a Christian, an ex-Muslim who became a Christian, and everything Dawkins said as an atheist. People were like on both sides going, wow, what an amazing point. One of the most phenomenal debates I've ever seen.
Great.
But he really was just like, no, I'm not having it. And he's saying it's better than Islam, but he would still prefer rational thinking.
Mm.
Whereas Ayaan was saying, what we're left with at the moment is just woke culture, because that's the only sort of magical thinking we've got. And Dawkins was saying, yes, we should teach rational thinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be a start, wouldn't it? You probably, one of the things that upsets me most as a father is the lack of critical thinking teaching in schools, and the fact that all of this crap. I mean, I got an email from my son's school yesterday with the DEI update of the school. I'm like, yeah, we really talk about race a lot here. And I'm like, this is the most expensive school in London, with the richest, most spoilt kids of all different skin colors and all of that. You should be teaching them not about skin color. You should be teaching them how they're going to interact with a normal person who doesn't own a G-Wagon or doesn't get dropped off to school by their G-Wagon. Mother. It's the really expensive Mercedes. Who doesn't get dropped off school by their mother in a 6.3 liter V8 G-Wagon, who gets out with her kids wearing an Extinction Rebellion t-shirt. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah. that's insane. I guess there's that private school thing. And I saw it myself when I went to school. There's a lot, we talked about it before off camera, there was a lot of Mockney going on.
Oh yeah.
Fake Cockney accents, as if they're sort of, because people are a bit ashamed. They don't want to look like they've come from good stock or whatever. And I think a lot of those people do go down that woke way.
But well, be careful what you wish for, because if you start talking Mockney at Harrow, like a few friends of mine did, yeah, and you start wanting to be like, you know, I'm one of them, innit? You may end up one of them. Which is what happened with a friend of mine.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Became a crack dealer and spent time in jail.
Yeah, but you don't want to suggest that anybody who is actually Cockney is a crack dealer in jail.
No, I'm saying he wanted to put on, if you're trying to adopt the thug persona, you may end up a thug.
Yeah.
It's got nothing It's got nothing to do with your accent.
Sorry, I see what you're saying. Yeah. It is mad. And I mean, a DEI officer at a posh school. But this is the problem.
They've changed it now. They know we're onto them. So so they now call it, they've changed it to diversity, equity, in inclusion and unity.
Well, they're just adding more shit to it.
Yeah. LGBTQIA++ LMNOP.
The problem is, and this has happened time and time again with regimes like this, they've been given a job. They want to keep their job, right? A DEI officer. So you get everything and you just change the standards again. You just keep changing it. I look at the one for TV in the UK. I looked at that a lot because of my own past with, you know, that stuff. Diamond Diversity, that they keep check of all the races and all that's someone's job, sitting there ticking he seems slightly black. And I think they're a bit trans on the inside, taking all the notes, ticking everything. And they got to a point where they're like, well, we've got now 90% of the program, the people at the showrunners in charge of each show on TV are women.
Mm.
90%. But they don't show that. And they go, 70% of directors who the showrunners actually employ are men. And so they're going, well, we've got to get that better. We've got to change every little bit. And it's just so authoritarian. But they want to stay in a job. So what do we do?
Well, they're also creating, it's a non-job as well. So it doesn't add, all it adds is an extra layer of bureaucracy to an already heavily red-taped world, you know, as we can see. So we live in the era of the non-jobber. So yeah, we're spending, what, 10 million quid a year in the NHS on diversity people. And it's just like, you don't do anything except create division. You do the exact opposite of what you're there to do. We don't need you. But it, you know, it is the modern secular religion. As you say, it's you know, the sky Jesus is being replaced by the God of the self. And imagine, humans make devils when they make gods of themselves.
Imagine that money, instead of going into DEI officers, going into actually making
my bank account.
Your bank account is what I meant. Going into making the NHS more robust.
Yeah, well, that's impossible. The NHS is,
it would help.
The NHS, I've got a theory about the NHS, that it was revenge for Britain not becoming communist, not becoming a communist country.
You've got to, I like the NHS because I'm very much of, you know, capitalism, equality, meritocracy. But if you're born into poverty and you're ill,
yeah,
like, come on.
100%. I mean, but what you can very easily do, the Swiss have a model of dealing with that, which is really good, which is like, if you're richer, you pay even more, and people who can't afford it pay nothing.
Interesting.
I'm like, great, that's a much better system. Rather than, you know, otherwise I just get into arguments with especially during COVID. I'd be really like, I pay your salary.
That's interesting.
I pay a lot of tax.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, compared to you, who loves the NHS more?
Yeah.
Me, it's a silly thing. I think the problem with the NHS is it's not run like a business, so it's not accountable to anything. And it's just, what is it? It's 170 billion a year to run the NHS, which unsubsidized is about 70% of the UK tax burden. So we're not even we're not even a country. We're a national health service with a little country attached to the side of it called Great Britain.
Bloody hell.
That's what we are.
That DEI stuff, were you seeing it before you stopped acting now?
Yeah, no, I don't want to stop acting. They just won't let me back in because I'll upset someone by offending them.
We should make something.
Yeah, well, I've got a few ideas. Yeah, I did notice it because I sat down once in a read through for a crime drama, and I went to the notes afterwards because I was important enough to be invited to the notes afterwards, and she went, "Oh, I'm so chuffed with all the diversity. Look at the diversity across there. We've got a mixed race girl, a black lad," and I'm just sitting there going, "You're sounding quite racist."
Did you say that?
No, I didn't. I was thinking. And then she goes, we got that, we got this, we got that, we got three Asians. And I went, there's a problem though with this, because in the plot of the script, that black lad, he's the biological son of that gingerhead Irish bloke. So well done on the diversity, but not so good on the believability. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
But they now that's sort of they work that in anyway, and just no one says anything.
Oh
but,
yeah.
But, I mean, did you ever find that maybe you thought you might have not got jobs because of it?
I very nearly didn't get the White Lines job because of it. I got offered the job in The Room, which and I'd worked with the director before, and all of the people that were important were in The Room, and I got offered a job in The Room. Waited 2 weeks, didn't hear back. Spoke to my agent. My agent said, "Got a diversity problem," and I was like, "Oh, what's a diversity problem?" And she went, "One of you's got to be black. Either you or the girl's got to be black." And I was like, "That's a really stupid idea, because if someone's getting a job based on their skin color, that would make them feel insecure. Like if someone said, we're only going to hire white people for this, sorry. But it was, I don't know, something." In the end, they did. They hired me, and the girl opposite me was a mixed race girl. And the first thing she was to me when I saw her on set was, "The only reason I got this job was because you're white." And I went, "That's not. You're a brilliantly talented person, and you know this is ridiculous. And you're the right person for the job. They chose you. You know, it was that." And you're just like, "What a shitty way of treating people, all in the name of kindness." It's amazing how much horror is done in the name of kindness, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I was saying before about racism will always happen, because that's how we are. We're tribal. We do notice differences.
Yeah.
People talk about unconscious bias. Well, I agree. I don't agree with the way it's applied only from one side to the other side. But you look at someone and go, "Oh, he looks like my dad. I might act differently with him," or so on.
Well, you do have unconscious bias, because I do appreciate it. It's just, don't hammer it into people's heads. Allow people to realize their own blind spots. So I was followed down the road by a couple of bike thieves on scooters, you know, and they were just going slowly behind me. And I was just like, "Yeah, someone's going to come and try and get my phone," because that's how it happens. And in my head, they were two black guys, because a lot of these guys are black guys who do it in London.
Mm.
But as I sort of stopped and thought, I'll go into this shop, and I went past, and it was two white guys. Mm. And I thought, that is an unconscious bias.
Yeah, you acknowledge your unconscious bias.
Yeah, so it is fair enough.
I'm happy. I thought that was going to be a Liam Neeson kind of story.
So I went for a knife and I went to kill him.
Any black person I could find.
Yeah, doesn't matter. I got them all.
That was one of the maddest things I've ever heard.
But well, actors shouldn't be encouraged to, you know, speak. As I'm proving.
Here we are. Bloody hell. Okay, that's interesting. Well, so it does exist. And I think, yeah, absolutely. If you're in a society where they say, no, that's racist, you can't say that thing, but this other way of judging people, the amount of times that you and I have heard white man, white man, white man.
Yeah.
And it isn't helpful. And you do, at first, when I was younger, I used to hear that. I used to be like, well, I guess I am that thing and everything's been easy. But you hear it over and over and it becomes more and more aggressive. And eventually you go, "Fuck you.
Yeah,
I don't need
you.
This."
Also, tell my mate Paul, who had a brain hemorrhage, who can't afford anything, who lives on fucking tranks because his brain is like that. He's got no money and is shat on by society. He's got white privilege.
Yeah.
Go on, then.
Yeah, absolutely bonkers.
Tell him that, Beyonce.
Oh.
Or Meghan Markle.
It's ridiculous. Where I've got another question for you, but where can people go and find your podcast and things?
Oh, yeah. So we just started, me and Calvin started doing Fox and Father, which is a podcast where he tries to tutor me in the ways of righteousness. And it's very popular suddenly, which is good. So that's on, it's called Reclaim the Media, the channel at the moment. And then I'm going to start doing a more sort of Michael Knowlesy type, sat in front of the computer, take two or three stories and beat them up.
Mm.
And what else are we going to do?
Just get me on it.
Yeah, I will. You certainly will. And I do some interviews. I'm going to interview some, but I tend to interview people that aren't famous, because I'm more interested in like
stories,
in what's going on with them. So I'm just going to interview a guy who's been thrown out of a conservative council for saying something about Christianity being good.
Ah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope people do check that out. And who is a heretic you admire?
Who is a heretic I admire? Thomas Sowell?
Mm. Tell me about Thomas Sowell.
Thomas Sowell, what is he, 90 now? Thomas Sowell is the one that says racism isn't dead, it's just being kept on life support by a bunch of grifters. You know, he's that guy, black guy from Harlem, came from nothing. Very intelligent. He's, you know, I really admire people who don't subscribe to the I'm a victim thing. So the heresy of being racially black but not being politically black is one of the nastiest ones in the world, as my dear love knows, because she's not politically black. She just thinks for herself. And people give her a lot of grief for it. I mean, the Daily Mail went after her, you know, from nothing. Just called her some crackpot, weirdo, conspiracy theorist nut job just because she happens to snog me.
Oh, well.
I really walked into that one, didn't I?
You did. You did.
Thank you, Lawrence Fox, for making your way into Gold Studios or Heretic Studios, or we don't have a name for it really. And I think we might even be changing it up where the studios are and everything like that in the coming weeks and months as the show continues to grow. Please do follow Lawrence Fox on Twitter or X and get a hold, you know, watch his show, which he puts out there and he puts on YouTube as well, and see what's what. I will see you next time.